In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The mass shooting last week in Georgia that left 8 people dead, including 6 Asian women, has heightened fears among Americans of Asian descent. And it comes at a time during this pandemic when there's been a rise in hate crimes directed at Asian Americans and against a historical backdrop of anti-Asian discrimination in this country going way back to the 1800s. This month, a report by the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism showed that hate crimes against Asian Americans in 16 major U.S. cities rose significantly by 149% from 2019 to 2020, during a period when overall hate crimes dropped, according to the center's study, by 7%. Civil rights advocates say the rise seems related to Asians and Asian Americans being blamed for the pandemic, which originated in China. Former President Donald Trump called the novel coronavirus the China virus, the China plague, and even the Kung flu. This hour, how Asian Americans in our state have experienced anti-Asian rhetoric, hate speech, discrimination during this pandemic, but also before in U.S. history. Are you Asian American? Have you or a loved one had an unsettling experience or been the target of anti-Asian rhetoric or discrimination? We'd like to have you join our conversation this hour. You can call 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us river2river@iowapublicradio.org. Joining us for the entire hour is Lynn Taw. She's a reporter with the news media organization Axios in Des Moines. Lynn, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Well, great that you're on. I'm recalling, I don't know if it's the last time, but one of the most memorable times having you on was back in July of 2018. And I want to mention this because it's a few words about your background as well. You were on this program in July of 2018 after the death of former Iowa Governor Robert Ray. You shared the moving story of how your father came to Iowa as a refugee in the 1980s, thanks to former Iowa Governor Robert Ray. Ray said he was especially proud of his work, beginning in the mid-1970s, to resettle refugees from the Vietnam War here in Iowa. And at that time, in 2018, you wrote a very personal article titled, "My Dad Was a Refugee Who Came to Iowa Thanks to Robert Ray. Now I choose to make this state my home." So, with your background as an Asian American woman and Asian American journalist based in Des Moines, you're perfectly cut out for our discussion today to reflect on what's been happening from a personal standpoint, but also a professional standpoint. So, Lynn, here's your invitation to also, with our other guests or callers this hour, please jump in with any questions you might have or thoughts. First of all,
awesome. Yeah.
First of all, let me have your personal thoughts, if you could share, when you heard about the murder, this mass shooting, and the death of the 6 Asian women last week in Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, when I just first saw the news about the shooting, I mean, I was shocked. You know, it had felt like, I mean, during the pandemic, that it had been a while since there had been news about a mass shooting in the first place. So that immediately stuck out to me. But then learning about, you know, the identity of the victims, that 8 of the shooting victims that had been killed, 6 of those were Asian women. I mean, immediately my heart just dropped. You know, I think about the Asian women in my life that I know. I think about myself and how we're all feeling. And then once more news and more details came out regarding the case, and listening to the local sheriff over there speaking about the motives and the intention behind the shootings, you know, saying Well, you know, we don't know if the intention behind it was a hate crime, but he was having a bad day, or you know, that he may have been a sex addict, kind of those different reasonings. You know, kind of hearing all of that and thinking about, you know, the history of systemic racism that the Asian American community has dealt with. You know, there was some anger as well.
And we'll hear more about anti-Asian rhetoric, discrimination in this country going way back to the 1800s. A little bit later, we'll have a criminal justice scholar join us from Iowa State University. Again, join our conversation this hour. Your reaction to the rising Asian American racist rhetoric, discrimination in this country. 1-866-780-9100. Lynn, tell us a little bit more about how the Asian American community in the Des Moines area reacted, perhaps your family, other members of the Asian American community, as you've been able to sense it.
Yeah, I mean, so I think, you know, this was kind of the climax of a difficult year for the Asian American community locally. You know, especially we had been hearing nationally different news reports regarding violence against Asian Americans, you know, stemming back to 2020, especially just reading about the uptick in violence towards Asian Americans in different cities. Especially with some of the conversations going on, like, you know, naming the COVID-19 virus as the China virus, the Wuhan virus, things like that. I think people in general have been feeling uneasy this last year and really nervous and worried, you know, hey, what are people going to think of me? Especially early on in 2020, if I go to the grocery store, is someone going to look at me and, you know, feel more scared of being around me? Are they going to feel angry towards me because, you know, they feel that the pandemic is China's fault because of some of the national rhetoric that was happening? And if so, does that seep into how we feel locally about, you know, the Asian American people that we see in our neighborhoods? So, you know, it's already been a year of feeling unsettled and feeling nervous, and you know, both online and in person in the community. But then I think once the shooting happened, it really just came to a boiling point. I mean, even, you know, like a week beforehand, my mom had talked about, you know, she was watching some national news and was listening to some news about these violent attacks in San Francisco. And she was asking me, do you think I need to get some mace? And I laughed. I was just like, you know, it's Iowa. Like, you're not going to need mace here in Iowa. And then, you know, the shooting happens. And then I had just visited her for dinner last night. And, you know, I just asked her for an update on that. And, you know, we're in the kitchen, and she pulls it out, and she just kind of chuckles, and she's like, yeah, I guess I ended up buying it. I'm like, you know, we kind of treat it like, oh, ha ha. But then it's like, if you really think about it, it's like, oh my God, like, my mom just bought mace. I mean, that really hits home. To at least for me, what my family is feeling, and you know, what my friends are feeling right now.
And do you recount it in some reporting you did for Axios about some specific incidents there in the Des Moines area? An Asian, I'll just read a couple of the notes that you had here. An Asian American woman in your article outside a car wash off Indianola Avenue. Someone called her a slur, told her, go back to your country. In another case, a driver threw an egg at an Asian American woman by Double Dragon in Des Moines last month. So I wonder, has this really opened sharing among the Asian community of discrimination more so than before?
I think so. I think people have felt more comfortable, and more empowered to verbalize what they've been enduring. I mean, because racism has always been there, right? But you know, a lot of times, especially culturally, I think people just want to keep their heads down. They don't want to rock the boat. But now, when something as big as the tragedy like this happens, you know, it the need to speak up is there, but also it feels like there's more of a platform that we're given to be able to speak out, right? So, you know, I think one of the things that really stuck out to me about some of those instances of discrimination here in the Des Moines area, you know, how many more have happened that we just don't realize, right? And it's difficult because, you know, I reached out to the Des Moines Police Department to ask them about any reports of attacks or assaults towards Asian Americans in the Des Moines area. And there had actually been a decrease this last year. And so, you know, you take that and then you think, well, you know, maybe that means that things are getting better. But then you also have to take a more nuanced approach and think, you know, maybe is there a reason people aren't reporting this last year? Are they nervous? You know, do they not want to make a big deal about things? And also, what are the instances that the community hasn't felt empowered to report, right? Like if someone, you know, yells a slur at you at the car wash, maybe you don't call the police, but you definitely tell, you know, your other friends in the Asian American community about it. I mean, friends tell friends. And I think right now, when I'm talking to my friends, you know, they're definitely feeling more unease at the moment.
Join our discussion. Lynn Ta is with us. She's an Asian American and a reporter in the Des Moines area. We're talking about how Asian Americans living in Iowa across the country are coping with rising racism. 1-866-780-9100. Perhaps you or a loved one have had an unsettling experience or been the target of some anti-Asian rhetoric or discrimination. We'd like to talk about it this hour, talk about remedies. What we can do about it. But first of all, to kind of nail down some specific instances here, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Dubuque. Maria is with us in Dubuque, and I see Maria, you have some Asian ancestry.
Yes, I am half Asian and half white.
And what is your
But
read
I
on
do
this?
look
Have
Asian.
Okay, you have an Asian appearance there. What do you want to chip in? Have you had an experience? Have you noticed a change in the climate or experienced anything?
The change in the climate makes total sense to me and also takes me back. I lived in Iowa City in the late 80s, early 90s, and it was around 89 or 90 that a Chinese graduate student at the University of Iowa didn't get a position that he had vied for and got upset and went on a rampage, shot people in two different university buildings, students and faculty alike. I was near the campus at the time and saw body bags being brought out from university buildings. And after that incident, I had people who didn't want me to help them in the store that I worked at, people making comments, whether they were joking or not, definitely increased after that incident.
Right, and that Iowans around at the time will remember that that mass shooting that happened on the campus of the University of Iowa. This is comes at a time, Maria, before mass shootings were almost a daily occurrence in this country. In fact, a rarity in this country. So it was such a shock when that happened, I believe, in 1990. But Maria, have you personally felt in anything out in public, in your interaction with others? You've got others in your Asian American community there in the Dubuque area talking about what we're talking about on this program?
I haven't experienced it or know closely people who have experienced it here in our community, but I have had Facebook friends and relatives who have expressed a different climate and some prejudice and racism since Corona hit.
Okay, Maria in Dubuque. Thank you very much. Maria dialed 1-866-780-9100. This Facebook post, a response to a post that I put up, yesterday from Edie, having an Asian daughter-in-law and Asian granddaughter, this violence scares the bleep out of me. Join our discussion, 1-866-780-9100. The phones. Patrick is in Davenport. Hi, Patrick. What do you want to chip in?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'd like to just point out that it's more than your average person on the street. I've been married to a Filipino woman for 7 years, and we've been struggling to get her a green card for all this time. And I felt that since the Trump administration and the whole Chinese virus thing that it reflected during our interview, and that she was treated poorly because she was Asian, and not to mention we were treated poorly. She was kind of singled out and treated poorly at airport security, whereas when I go to her country, I'm welcomed and treated with respect and dignity. And she's here, she gets treated with suspicion and contempt.
Mm-hmm. Patrick, let me turn to Lynn Taub. What do you think of the last two callers, Patrick's remark there and observations? It's hard to know, isn't it, Lynn, or anyone can be mistreated. It's hard to know if you're being mistreated, treated differently because of your race, isn't it?
It can be. I think the thing is that, especially if you are not white and have lived it your entire life, I mean, you kind of know, right? Mm. You know, an instance happens and maybe you might gaslight yourself and think, was this actually racist or not? But most of the time, I mean, your instinctual reaction to it as, you know, an Asian American growing up in your own skin, you definitely recognize it. And so I think especially, Patrick, the story that you shared, I think is really poignant because you're right. I mean, it's not just, you know, off the street. I mean, people immediately look at her, you know, even people in power or in systems that are supposed to be treating her equally and taking a look and, you know, treating her differently. And especially, you know, if English is her second language, people are often, you know, people can mistreat you or just, you know, push you to the side or not think that much about you and make assumptions. And so, you know, I definitely believe that experience and, I'm just really sorry for that.
Patrick, thank you for
my first experience. Yeah. I mean, she was the first Asian person I ever knew. And I always try to treat everyone with respect. And I was really taken by surprise that my own people and people of authority would treat her differently or give her any less respect. She's an intelligent woman, although her English is a little broken and she's sometimes shy to speak and possibly doesn't always say specifically what they want to hear. And in that, I have to admit, I'm a bit defensive about it, but yeah, it's more than the person on the street. I feel that it's embedded in our institutions as well.
Patrick in Davenport, certainly sorry to hear about your experiences with your partner. Thank you for sharing them with us, Patrick in Davenport. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Before the break, let's move on to another caller, 1-866-780-9100. Sherry, I believe in Rock Island, just across the border in Illinois. Welcome to the program, Sherry. We're coming up on a break, but thank you for joining us. Do you have a story or an observation?
I guess it's an observation that these people committing these atrocious actions against Asian Americans are presuming that these people aren't born and bred Americans. My daughter is adopted from China, and she actually risked her life last year to go into the hospital as a hospital worker and take care of people dying and suffering from COVID-19. She was not paid a lot to be working as a tech in a hospital going in to do that. And yet she dug right in. And if somebody had threatened her, it would have been terrible. She encountered a little bit of reaction, just a little, against her facial looks in the hospital at the time, but not a lot. It's been pretty good. But these people are presuming that they know something about people just based on their facial features. Mm-hmm. And they may not know anything about the background on these people. And China's a huge country. It's like assuming that somebody in Washington, D.C. is responsible for the actions of somebody in California. It's it's just ridiculous.
Sherry in Rock Island, thank you for joining us. Lynn, do you have a reaction to what Sherry said? Does that ring true for you?
Yeah. Sherry, the experience that you said your daughter had really resonates with me, especially as someone who was born in Des Moines, Iowa. You know, I like to brag that it's just up the street at Mercy. but then people ask you, they're like, okay, like, where are you from? And I'm like, I'm from Des Moines. And they're right. Like, okay, that's great. But like, where are you from? And I'm just like, you know, why is your assumption that, you know, I wasn't born here in America just based off of how I look? So yeah, I definitely, that experience resonates.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we'll learn a little bit more about the history of anti-Asian racism. And after we take a short break, when we come back, we'll talk with a criminal justice scholar at the Iowa State University. She actually co-authored a paper last year in the middle of 2020 that looked at hate crimes during health crises. And they're not new here in the U.S., but also looked at how anti-Asian hate crimes during the COVID-19 pandemic have furthered what is called othering of Asian Americans. And we'll learn about that when we come back. We'd like to have you join us this hour with your stories, your encounters. Are you an Asian American? Tell us about any experience that you've had, or perhaps that of a loved one, that can be described as anti-Asian or discrimination. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Back with Lynn Ta, reporter with the news media organization Axios. In just a moment, I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
The Iowa legislature is in session.
Let's just go around. We got a lot of people.
There are proposals for constitutional amendments, education, taxes, the budget, and many policy bills.
So what needs to be fixed?
Our weekly podcast, Under the Golden Dome, is following the session.
I want to thank you for your consideration of this important legislation.
I'm John Pemble. Subscribe to the podcast or hear Under the Golden Dome on our website, iowapublicradio.org.
And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, how Asian Americans in our state have experienced anti-Asian rhetoric, hate speech, discrimination, especially during the pandemic. We'd like to have you join our conversation. Your input, especially if you are Asian American or have Asian American loved ones. Tell us about an experience that you've had, if you've been the target of anti-Asian rhetoric or discrimination. 1-866-780-9100. Joining us for the entire hour, Lynn Ta is a reporter, also an Asian American, born and bred in Iowa, as she likes to say, as she did last half hour, reporter with Axios in Des Moines currently. We have another guest joining us. Shannon Harper is with us, assistant professor of criminal justice at Iowa State University. Shannon, welcome to you.
Hello. Hi, Ben. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. This is interesting. Last year, you co-authored a paper that was published in the American Journal of Criminal Justice about how anti-Asian hate crimes during health crises are unfortunately not new. So tell us, when has this happened before in U.S. history?
Well, we saw, we've seen a track record of these higher incidents of violence against individuals who are blamed for causing pandemics, even though they don't necessarily have, you know, much to do with it at all. It's about, you know, the animals that were left out in the open. And that's what's at fault. It's just the virus spread, not a particular group of people. But we've seen that with varying immigrants across history. As an example, we saw that with the Irish, we saw that with the Irish, with certain pandemics and with things like, the Irish disease. I'm sorry. So with the Irish, with the cholera, the Jewish with consumption, which was tuberculosis. And then we also saw this with the Irish and German newcomers who were blamed for yellow fever. So we saw this a lot with, these infectious diseases that were occurring in the U.S. historically, back in the 1800s, early 1900s, and high levels of violence against those individuals due to, this perception that they were to blame for what was happening.
Right. And we know the former president, Donald Trump, liked to use terms like China virus, the China plague, even Kung flu, and he never walked that back. He never thought there was anything wrong with it. I think his explanation, as I remember, was the virus comes from China, which may be factually true. He never backed down there. I want you to explain why that is such a problem when it could be factually correct.
Well, many have argued, scholars have argued that it's both racist and xenophobic. And I'll get into that in just a moment. But the World Health Organization has established guidelines in the naming of these diseases, of these pandemics. And one of the guidelines, they highlight is that you shouldn't name a particular disease after like a culture or a race of people or a geography like China, right? And that's because it increases levels of fear in the population against those individuals the name targets. So people become, the China virus, they're like, oh, well, the Chinese need to be blamed for this, right? So they, they're targeted at higher levels. There's more of a we see more instances of people being excluded. So Asian Americans being excluded or pushed to the periphery, which I refer to as othering. So you get angry about this pandemic spreading, about the fact you can't go outside. You're just really angry and upset about it. You're afraid you're going to catch it and potentially die. You need somebody to blame. And so the closest target are those individuals, the Chinese in this instance, and any instance, and anybody that looks Asian are targeted. So that's why those names are really important, is because we don't want to perpetuate blame on certain groups of people or support blame on certain groups of people through the widespread reference to particular diseases as associated with cultures and identities.
Mm-hmm. Stand by. Shannon Harper, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice at Iowa State University. Want to get some more input from our listeners, 1-866-780-9100. Cindy is with us. Where are you calling from, Cindy?
Hi. Yeah, I'm currently in Ames, which is from Iowa State. So
sure.
I'm currently still in Ames.
Okay. And do you have an Asian American, an Asian background?
Yeah, I am originally from China.
Mm-hmm. And what is your experience, especially during this pandemic?
Yeah, so for me, I am originally from China. I'm still a citizen there. So I went to U.S. when I was 14. So I came here for high school. I was pretty little when I first came here. Be honest, I was really nervous when I first came here. I was pretty excited about the opportunity my family provided for me for a better and higher education. And at the same time, I do worry because I will be living in a different country by myself. And also, I did heard about a little bit like racial discriminations about it. So I kind of worried it. But throughout my experiences in high school, I really appreciate everybody I met there. They're pretty respect me. I just feel like the first step is really hard because knowing someone is from different country with a totally different background, it's really hard to have that first step because you don't know how to start like reaching out. You don't want to make them feel disrespectful just because that. So when I first started, I don't know how to be friends with everybody. I don't know how to get involved. But everyone is really welcoming, and I think it's maybe because it's a small community. I went to high school in Winona, Minnesota, so it's like smaller community. Everybody's really nice there. They are super welcoming.
Sandy, really in the interest of our time is slipping away from us, I want to ask you a pointed question as an ISU international student from China. Has the time you've been here during the pandemic changed the way you are treated by some people? Have you had any instances that you can trace back to people treating you in a disparaging way because you are Chinese or look Asian?
Yeah, I can feel people look at me differently, like after the pandemic started, just because of my look. I get nervous to going out after pandemic started too, because I know it started in China and people kind of like need someone to blame to, like the professor said. So I get really nervous when I go out, and I do feel people will kind of like judge me, like giving me the look after the pandemic started. But I haven't really experienced anything, like no one really come up to me or like say anything yet.
Okay, Cindy.
But I can do feel the look.
Thank you very much, and thank you for sharing your experience. ISU student Cindy calling in. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
And there are varying degrees here. Let me share, before we go to another caller with Shannon and Lynn here, our producer of this program, Matt was in Trader Joe's in Coralville just the other day when he encountered a shopper at Trader Joe's with a mask, a coronavirus mask that stated China virus on it. And so, Shannon, this is exactly what you were talking about. When you name a virus after a piece of geography, it spreads horrible feelings about that group of people.
Right. And absolutely. And it's just that mask. It's just horrible to hear that. When we're in these situations where there's a lot of fear and frustration, and I'm not saying that fear and frustration is a way to excuse some of the behavior we've seen. But within that context, people, need somebody to target. And they exclude those who are different than themselves and work to make them as the individuals that, to blame. So I think, it's important. This language is important because we need to think about institutional support for hate crime and for targeting individuals who are Asian. And what I mean by that is that during the Trump administration, Trump called the disease the China virus, the Wuhan flu, et cetera. Even Senator John Cornyn, who was a Republican from Texas, he said in a press conference that China was to blame for the spread of the disease because the Chinese are a culture where people eat bats, snakes, and dogs and things like that. Right? So we see the sort of like embedded bias, this sort of racist, ugly thinking about individuals that's very exclusionary. And in doing so, it sort of fosters this social bias that's been there historically
where people, you know, Asians have immigrated to the U.S. and people, Americans who have been here for years and years and years feel angry about their jobs getting taken away and feel like their wages have gone down and things like that. So we see this effort to sort of push them out of the periphery, to hurt them, to harm them, to keep them separate from us, to, you know, protect ourselves from this evil, evil virus. And in so doing, we harm entire communities. People are so devastatingly affected, as we've seen, you know, recently. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's also talk this hour with Brian Lay. Brian, welcome to the program. Brian is a student program coordinator for the what's called the Science Bound program at Iowa State University, also an advisor for the Asian Student Union. Brian Lay, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Ben.
And you are also have Asian heritage as well?
Yes, I identify as being Vietnamese American.
Mm-hmm. Give us your reaction to what's been happening during this pandemic, in particular that tragic shooting last week in Georgia. How did this impact you, your thinking, perhaps of your family as well?
I would definitely say the first thing that I think of is, you know, understanding who I am and where I'm at. Acknowledging my privilege as being an Asian male is very different experience compared to being a Asian female. So the first thing that I really thought of, you know, after that incident was my mom and my sister's safety. And for them to, you know, go out into the public and that fear, that was my initial reaction of what occurred from the incident last week. But then also, I just wanted to add on to that. It's like a lot of these have been happening all over the nation for quite some time now. And as we've heard earlier in this segment, you know, some of these cases may go unreported. So then my thought is like, you know, first thing is bringing awareness to these issues, but then what's the action plan?
Right.
I think, Ben, that's the biggest question is like, what's next?
Right.
What can we do actively to hone down on these hate crimes and the racism that we see across the nation?
Right. And as we near the end of the program, that's exactly the chapter we wanted to get into. What is your read on that? What is the remedy, the longer-term solution here? Brian, what can individuals do to stem this tide of hate?
I mean, the biggest thing, Ben, is definitely education and bringing that awareness piece to folks who may, you know, may not understand some points or even to educate the ignorance. Those are the biggest key things that I would say that first needs to be laid down as a foundation. But then also on top of that, for those who do have the awareness piece, what action plans can we have for them as well?
Mm-hmm. Let me go back to you, Lynn Tom. Brian mentioned Asian women in particular. How do you think Asian women in particular are thought of in our culture, in this instance, especially in light of that horrible shooting?
Yeah, I think that there's been a long history of both sexism and racism kind of mixed together towards Asian women, right? So, you know, especially in this case where he said that he was a sex addict and had wanted to, you know, eradicate that part of him, for him to go and choose to shoot and kill Asian women. I mean, we have long dealt historically with being fetishized and seen as, you know, this exotic model in the U.S. And I think then we see the consequence of that dehumanization in these type of shootings.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go quickly to the phones and then wrap up our conversation with some forward-looking comments about continuing with solutions, what we can do as individuals. Let's go quickly to Dan in Iowa City. Dan, we don't have much time. Would you like to have an experience you can share quickly?
Well, even before the pandemic, my wife has experienced racism. She's Filipino. We had people actually try to get into our house thinking she was an illegal Mexican, which is terrifying for her. But then, after the coronavirus, she's terrified. She's had comments. We live in a small town. I'm in Iowa City, but I live in a small town. So she doesn't even like going outside.
Since the start of the pandemic, because of what she has experienced, Dan.
Yeah, she was terrified since Trump. To be honest with you, it has truly escalated for her. She wants out of the country, and she's an American citizen.
Okay. She wants to leave the country.
Oh, yes.
So what are you going to do? Yeah, what action are you taking specifically, Dan?
I bought land in another country.
Really? So
that's going to be the action.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Dan.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry to hear about your experiences, your wife's experiences, but thank you for sharing so that Iowa Public Radio listeners can know the gravity of the situation. Dan, thank you.
You bet.
Let's take another quick call. Gene in Davenport. Gene, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to mention that if people, non-Caucasian people in this country have had to develop almost a sixth sense to know where they are more of the time and their surroundings just so that they can feel more safe. And I want to encourage people that if they do have Asian friends that convey discomfort or fear, that they advocate for them, be supportive of them, be a bystander for them, and reach out to them to see how they are doing. My daughter is adopted from Korea, U.S. citizen, came to this country as an infant. She's expecting my first grandchild, and she basically just stays in the house. She's terrified of going out because of people being spit on or pushed down and those sorts of things. So, again, if people are, have Asian friends or know of people who are of Asian descent, please reach out to them and help them feel safe and help them feel comfortable. Thank you.
Gene, thank you. So sorry to hear about those experiences of your daughter there. Lynn Taw, we're coming to the end of the program. Shannon, we're coming to the end of the program as well. Brian started off on talking about where do we go from here? What are the best ways that we can act as individuals, Lynn, going forward to stem this hate?
Yeah, my biggest thing is that, I mean, we need to acknowledge our humanity, right? So, if you're thinking about trying to support the Asian community, think about your own actions and the type of things that you've said that may have been a microaggression or may have not been enough. So if your primary interaction with an Asian person is ordering orange chicken at your local Chinese restaurant, maybe think a little bit further about what you as a person can do to communicate or help a nonprofit or an organization. If you sit silent when maybe someone makes a joke about an Asian person or you do a fake laugh and don't say anything to stop it, you're part of the problem. We need more allies and people who are willing to stand up for us and recognize our humanity.
Lynn Taw, that sounds like great advice. What thoughts do you want to leave us with, Shannon Harper?
Echoing what she just said, to be a good bystander. So if you see people mistreating someone of Asian descent or another race or ethnicity, intervene or get that person some help. Don't just ignore it. Again, speak up when you hear people saying racist, terrible things or talking about how it's okay to use violence against Asian people. Don't stay quiet. Don't support the behavior by just remaining quiet. Support the Asian individuals in your communities. Be kind and respectful and supportive. Check in with people in your classes if you're in college.
Yeah, right.
Join in the advocacy movement that's going on right now. We've seen lots of, several protests in several cities where Asian Americans and people of Asian descent and their friends and supporters are, speaking up loudly for what's wrong about all of this and protesting to be treated as they should. So join in those movements and be a supportive, kind, compassionate person.
Okay, Shannon, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much. Recognize that our Asian American neighbors and friends, as people, migrants from all over the world, are part of our rich American fabric. I want to thank our so many for calling in this hour, and our guests, Brian Lay of Iowa State University, Shannon Harper, also of ISU, Lynn Ta, reporter with the news media organization Axios. Lynn, Shannon, and Brian, thank you so much this hour for helping us discuss this difficult topic.
Thank you so much.
River to River is produced by Matt Alvarez and Rick Brewer. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. A News Buzz edition tomorrow. We'll hope you'll join us. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for listening.
Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.